first year I ever seen you rope. It was the year that I had won pretty good at the circuit finals. Mm-hmm. And so I was in the top 5 or top 10 of the world. Mm-hmm. And so I got into San Angelo, and you had done something real similar. What was it at your circuit finals?
Yeah, I won good at my circuit finals and then went to San Angelo, got into San Antonio that year. I was roping with Justin Yost at San Angelo, and I don't know. I can't remember who I roped with at San Antonio that year. Might have been Eric Fabian, the guy that I won all the money with at the circuit finals.
Yeah, man. How old were you when that? I mean, that's been 2 or 3.
It's probably the winter of 2018, 2019. Because I lost all my weight in 2019.
Mm-hmm. I mean, dude, the first time I saw you I don't remember really seeing you. Like, I don't know. It was about a year. And I was like, I had, you know, when you like double take, I was like,
right, a lot of people did the double take. I was big. I was really big for a long time.
How much weight did you lose?
I lost 150 pounds.
150 pounds? Mm-hmm. How good does it feel being 150 pounds lighter?
Like a new man, really. Half a man I was before.
Man. Think about that. Like, just putting an extra 100 pounds and walking around and doing mm-hmm. things.
I know, and like my horses and stuff like that. Like, I didn't ever really put it into perspective until, like, I lost the first 50 pounds, and then I was like, okay, that's a sack of feed that I take off my horse's back. And then I lost the other 50, and I was like, oh my goodness. And then, I mean, I'm going with 150 pounds because I didn't weigh myself like the day I started losing weight. I'm going off the last time I went to the doctor, and that was the weight that I was.
Right. It does anything. Like, I think I've lost 25 pounds. I'll fluctuate between like 205 and 230. Mm-hmm. If because I'm weird. I feel like I wake up in the mornings and I'm really into eating healthy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a mindset when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah. My problem is towards the evening. Mm-hmm. I get eating bad.
It's not good. The evening time's the worst for me. Yeah. I mean, I can get up and have a mindset and be good for the day and then get to the evening and it's like, well, it's here. Might as well eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not afraid to just put down some calories at night. Yeah. Most of the day I'm pretty good, but at night, man, I'll lose complete control and mm-hmm. just fall off the wagon. But what did you do? When did you decide to lose this weight and why?
So I've been big my whole life. It's just how it was. And, but I've always roped and always had roped good. And it was about two different things is what made me change my life pretty much. I come to Texas and stay with my cousin and Brock, and one of his friends come over that I'd never met before, but I'd heard my cousin talk about him. His name is John C. Bryan. And he watched me rope and he's like, man, you rope really good. But could you imagine how good you roped if you lost some weight? And I was like, you know, it kind of like hurt my feelings a little bit. I was probably 15 years old at this time.
Right.
So it hurt my feelings. So go on. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to show him. I just keep doing my own deal. Just keep roping. Keep roping. Well, then I start roping with Zach Kilgason in 2019. And we go all year. And we amateur rodeo, go to the pro rodeos. Well, he gets on this diet that he tells me about, and he's really not that big at all. He was just trying to lose 30 pounds or something. And he's like, man, you should try it. I'm like, I don't need to go on a diet. I'm fine. Yeah. I rope fine. I do fine, whatever. Well, I guess the middle of the summer and we're rodeoing, and I missed my daily like 3 times. And I'm at Sykeston, Missouri. It is so hot in Sykeston, Missouri. It was when it was two header. So we run our first one in the afternoon. It's like 105 degrees, sweating awfully. Go to the perf that night, and I swear it's just as hot as it is in the perf. I come around, miss my daily. I walked out of the arena, went to the trailer, and had kind of a breakdown. And I called my girlfriend, and I'm like, I said, I'm either going to quit roping or lose weight. One of the two. So I left there, and Zach told me what he'd been doing, which is 2,000 calories a day, no bread, no pasta, no sugar, no soda. So, like, cut everything out.
Yeah, no sugar.
Well, like, no sugar to the point of, like, candy. Like, I'm okay. Like, I'm not going to go through the sugars and, like,
no desserts. Good food. Yeah. Yeah, no desserts.
No candy, no desserts, no nothing. But, like, no bread to the point of, like, I'd have tortillas and stuff like that. But no, like, actual piece of bread, no buns, anything like that.
Just trying to, like, every time you can cut out a carb or, but also 2,000 calories a day is, it's tougher than you think.
It was the hardest thing I ever had to do in my life. And I woke up the next morning and I started doing it. Well, the kicker was 12-on-1 started a new day. So we'd go to all the amateur rodeos in, like, Ohio, Illinois, all up there, and the slacks would go late. So I would hold out on my calories. I'd leave like 1,200 calories for dinner just so I could be like, I could feel like I was full, have a good dinner. Well, slacks would go late.
Right.
And we would haul butt to the gas station trying to get somewhere just to eat. Because me and him were doing it at the same time.
Yeah.
We'd haul butt to the gas station and 12-on-1, if it hit 12-on-1, it didn't matter. Whatever you ate at 12-on-1 counted for the next day too.
Right.
So there's a lot of days where we didn't.
You had like 1,200 calories in a day. And,
yeah.
Because, yeah, went roping. Oh, man. How hard is it going to sleep hungry, though?
That's the best thing is, I mean, you just go to sleep. It's hard to do. But if I would just not think about it, watch roping.
Just try to take your mind off of it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you were able to stay motivated, just stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole...
I mean, as soon as I started doing it, it was just like my weight just flooded off of me.
Yeah, I mean.
I lost it all in a year.
Right.
Really, pretty much.
That's a lot. I mean, you're almost, if you lost 150 pounds in a year,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what a, like a 1.1, like a
I know, when
pound
I,
of.
I went to, I guess that was in, what, Sexton, 1st of August?
Yeah, it's, I've been there one time. And I think they middle 10th of August right there. Yeah. Cause it's the same time as like Hermiston and, like Logan, Utah and a few of them that way. And so it's like, I've never really worked that rodeo too much cause I'm from back West, but it was nice when I went there last year and I could see that sucker getting really hot over there.
And that's what I didn't ever hear about it. So I knew it would get warm, but I had a denim shirt on. When this was all happening, like the thickest Wrangler denim shirt you could have. And I was just like, I walked out of the arena, walked to the trailer, and I'm like, I'm going to quit one or the other.
Right.
And if I can't lose the weight, then I'm going to quit roping because I'm too dedicated of a person to just be average the rest of my life. And I want to get better at it. And that was what was holding me back. I just peaked. I was at the peak for so long that I was just tired of it.
Well, too, and it's got to eat at you when you make a mistake and it's because physically it costs you.
Yeah.
And that's a crazy, crazy feeling. But also, man, being that size, it's going to be harder to get as much done in a day.
Absolutely.
I mean, walking around with 150 extra pounds all day doing your tasks and to rope and ride horses and do that, it's not an easy job.
No.
It's not easy on your horse, like you're saying. And to add that in, it's crazy to think about. I mean, you in a year became a different person, just total transformation.
Yeah.
When did you decide you wanted to rope for a living?
For a living?
Or just, yeah, this is what you're chasing.
When I was really young, but I started roping off a horse. Like, I always loved to rope when I was a little kid. Like, always had a rope in my hand. I went to dummy ropings, did that whole deal. But I never really thought about roping for a living until I started roping off a horse and I started entering. Like, the first time I entered, I just fell in love with team roping and rodeo. I always loved rodeo, but I fell in love with the fact of entering and making money and making a living at team roping the first time I entered, and I was probably 8 years old.
Right.
And which I wasn't even entered. My parents told me I was entered. Found out years later that they had just give me an envelope with $20 in it and told me that I won something, but that was the day that I just knew that's what I want to do for the rest of my life.
It's funny how those like things are so clear too, huh? Like just mm-hmm. see it like it was yesterday.
Oh yeah.
You grew up in New York?
Yep. Till I was 18.
What is that like in New York? Just being in the Western industry, you know, the team ropings and stuff. What's that like?
I'd like to say it's different, but it's no different. There's a group. It's a whole big group up there. Everybody knows everybody. The same people go to the same ropings, the same rodeos, week in, week out. Goes to the same places to practice in the wintertime. In the wintertime mainly, because there's only so many. There's three indoors, really, in my part of the country. And so it's... There's groups of people. There's the PRCA guys, and then there's the guys that go mainly just the open rodeos and some of the amateurs, and then there's the jackpot, like the number nine guys. They all kind of just stay and go to the Sunday jackpots, but it's great in the summer. I love it up there in the summer, really. The weather's nice. Shoot, we go to five. You can go to five rodeos a week within 40 minutes of my house in the summertime.
Five rodeos a week.
Mm-hmm.
And
for 10 weeks.
What are the arenas like? Are they pretty? Are they like, they set them up? I mean, I just haven't seen them.
There's
a lot of roping back east.
There's three permanent arenas that have weekly rodeos at them in the summertime. Then one is really long and not really wide. And there's a concrete wall on the left side that the horses have to pull up, head horses have to pull up every week. And then there's another one in Vermont that is big, wide open, on top of a mountain, the most beautiful arena you've ever seen, most beautiful scenery. Steers, short barrier steers are good, and you can just muck it out of them every week. And then there's another one they have an open rodeo at that's just kind of an average-sized arena. But... kicker up there, there's fair rodeos on right. tracks, which are like dirt car tracks or stuff like that. They're not in the infield. They're on the track, and they're not very wide, and the ground is usually horrible.
Yeah. A ton of those tracks. So it makes for real like short boxes, fast mm-hmm. setups, like short four-second runs can happen.
Yeah,
and
it depends on the bear. Depends on the steers.
But do they set it very long very often out there? Just keep it pretty short?
Not where I'm from. Right. When I amateur rodeoed in like Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, all that, they had the barriers strapped out there. Steers, one would run, one would walk. Like you're up the same steers week in, week out, every rodeo. Like that's the difference than out here. Like you go to rodeo all the time, and you'll see different sets of steers different places, but these steers get roped some places four nights a week. You're up the same set.
It's just and it's because a lot of the stock there's just not as many stock contractors out there.
There's three
stock contractors.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably three
or four including Cowtown, New Jersey.
Right. Okay, so you grew up amateur rodeo on the jackpots. Mm-hmm. Do they jackpot for a lot of money out there?
No.
Like $30 ropings?
Yeah. A lot of 30. Like the most you'll see is $50 a man.
$50 a man.
And not very many open ropings. There's, some 12 slides and stuff like that. But there's normally like when I was growing up, there was three really good ropings a year. Like everybody went to them. You go camp out, you stay all weekend, and they'd have an open roping at it. And that's what I like dreamed about. When I was a kid, getting a rope at those open ropings just around the house. And then they all kind of piddled out when I my parents would let me enter them pretty much.
Right. So those pro rodeoing, there's a decent amount of pro rodeos up there. Like,
mm-hmm.
is it Woodstown?
Woodstown. Cowtown. Yeah. That's what we call it.
Cowtown.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the pro rodeos? Like you were probably 16, 17 years old, was that when you were about an 8 healer right around then, right?
Yeah, I was 7+, right around
7, then. 7 plus, and amateur rodeo, and it started about 16 years mm-hmm. old, and that's, so about 18, you said, Is that when you moved out here? When? How? What year did you move out here?
I went back and forth, but I think I was 19, 18 or 19, and I went to Florida for the winter. And I roped with Justin Yost the whole winter and went to the circuit rodeos out there. And then I went home for a month, and then I went with Zach Kilgus to all the rodeos, the amateurs in Ohio and stuff. And then went back to Florida, and then from Florida to Texas.
Right.
And then I've been here ever since.
When did you decide it was time to come to Texas? And
when I was winning at the Florida rodeos.
Right.
I kind of wanted to do it, and I didn't just want to throw myself to the wolves and just come out here right away, because I just, which, like I said, it all kind of worked out. I, you know, lost weight. I was roping good. Felt like I needed to change it up from New York. Thought Florida would be the good path to go. It was a great path to go. Great rodeos. Go there. And, you know, I lost the weight. When I lost the weight, and, you know, it was sold a couple horses, got a couple horses, and I was like, I think it's time for me to go out there. And I'm glad I didn't go out before.
Right.
I'm glad I didn't come here before, because I would have just...
Well, and that's the hard thing about out here, is there's this weird balance of competition. Like, the opens are so tough, and even the 16, 17 opens out here are pretty dang tough.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, learning how to win is, there's this weird, I feel like some guys have it, some guys don't.
Mm-hmm.
They just know how to win. And I think a lot of it is being able to do it at, they learn it at, like, on a small scale.
Yeah.
And then they, as they progress in life, they, or what they're doing, they kind of can build onto mm-hmm. it with these wins. And do you feel like that was something? Because I remember watching you heal right off, and when you were a little bit bigger,
mm-hmm.
and you could heal fast.
Yeah.
And you kind of had those. You could tell, like, where your shot, at least rodeoing, like, we're at San Angelo, and San Angelo's really fast rodeo. Mm-hmm. Score's pretty short, and you knew right where to be over there.
Yeah.
Is that something that you think happened, like, kind of learned how to win and then just tiered it up, like, went to Florida, where there's probably a little bit more competition, a little more mm-hmm. rope, you know, just
a little more roping.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
And you just kind of understood that, and then at the point where, okay, it's time to come to Texas.
Yeah.
And you have you're physically ready, but mm-hmm. you have some money put together, so you can kind of handle the ups and downs a little bit. Was that the plan?
Yeah, I just knew, which, I mean, handling the finances now, I mean, that's the hardest part of being out here to me, is because you got to go to get better, but it's so, like, I grew up winning. It's just, and I'm not, don't say that to be ignorant in any way. I was just used to winning, and I learned how to win many different ways, because when I was 14, 15, 16, I roped with lower number headers. I had to throw fast because I couldn't keep up with the higher number guys at home, because my header caught a lot. He just wasn't as fast. So I had to learn how to throw fast. Well, then I turn 18, and now I can get the higher number guys up there because I can pro rodeo. They wouldn't split me in at the amateurs because they weren't going to cut one of their pro rodeo partners for me.
Right.
Which, fair enough.
Yeah.
So I turn 18, I get my PRCA card, I get one of the best headers up there, and we all split in. Well, now their tournament steers a little bit faster, and I'm throwing fast like I normally do, and it's just not working. Because it's just, the steers were not set up right in the arena, and I was throwing at the wrong time. So then I had to go back, revamp. Now I'm figuring out how to catch second, third jump. Get that figured out. And then that's when things kind of, I could see the run happening better. I could see the pace of the rodeo happening better. I could read steers better. And then I come out here, and it's a total different game out here.
Yeah, it's so what was the biggest difference that you noticed immediately out here to everywhere else you've been?
the cattle number one, and the amount of people that will win every time. I mean, there's everybody out here could win at any given moment.
There's a lot of guys that are pretty competitive. Mm-hmm. When I say pretty competitive, I mean like it's really odd when you look at the guys that make the NFR. There's not a lot of teams outside of this area that make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is. There's some guys, like I think Aaron Rodgers does a great job, you know, mm-hmm. going to Arizona, the Miners, obviously. And there's other teams that do it. But it's just a huge percentage of guys right here in this area. And I think a lot of it's, I mean, it's kind of like you come out here because this is where the most money can be made.
Yep.
It's where the most competition is, and mm-hmm. you can push yourself to get to that.
Yeah. If I wanted to get what my end goal is, I have to be here, no matter what.
So what do you see in like some of the great healers, and just the open rope that's coming around here? Like, what are the healers doing different?
Number one is horsepower. It's amazing. I mean, that kind of sets some of the guys apart is their horses. Horses help them so much and catch every time. Like Travis Graves, Jade. I mean, I can go on and on, but like you watch those guys, they catch every time, no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's what separates the great from the good, I think.
Yeah, like a lot of those guys they just know. I feel like they never panic.
Mm-mm.
They
could go first hop or fourth hop and never look like they got out of their living room chair. They just stay, like, everything's so perfect, and they decide when they throw. They don't. There's no other factor of when they let go of the rope, that's when they want to throw.
Right. So getting out of here with that, how do you try to manage that balance? Because you got to compete with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a tall task, and you know, you're wanting to climb the ladder and work mm-hmm. on your roping. So how do you approach that?
Well, I use I don't know. I try not to go out of my comfort zone. My comfort zone is I throw fast quite a bit, and I'm trying to get away from that as much as possible. But to keep up, I feel like right now I throw fast in the practice pen. I throw fast at the jackpots. I throw fast at the rodeos, because that's just my style. That's what I feel comfortable. And the more I can catch throwing fast, the better, the more I'm going to be able to keep up and be able to hang with the guys out here.
Right. Well, and two, it seems to me like the guys, they can throw fast,
mm-hmm.
but they do it, like you said, they have control as well. But when they throw fast, it's like they don't try for a hop.
No.
They're just healing when the steer takes that first good jump.
That's right.
And there are some guys, like I think Hunter Cook does it really good, and
mm-hmm.
they're just healing up.
They just put the when they put the bottom strand on the ground, it's
yeah.
They got them captured. It doesn't matter where they are.
So managing money.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the biggest thing you've learned, or one piece of advice that you would give on managing your money when you come out here?
I've had to go back to, I don't know, I want to rope in the opens. I want to enter every open roping because I want to be around them guys. I want to get better. I want to see it. I want to expose myself. But I didn't want to enter the 14s and the 15s because I was halfway struggling in those ropings too, because, you know, the handles weren't the same, the cattle weren't the same, and I was trying to throw fast like I do in everything else, and it just wasn't working. And then I kind of regrouped, and I went to entering them more, and I kind of learned how to win again, felt the winning deal, and then it kind of carried over to the opens. So I felt like you can't be afraid to back off sometimes. You can go and go and go and go and just run yourself into a hole that you can never, that you can't get, that practicing won't get you out of.
Right.
So I think it is okay sometimes to back down. Normally the 14s and the 15s, 16s, whatever, they're not 500 man like the best opens are. You can put up 100, 150 and just go a couple times and figure out how to win again and ease yourself back into it and not just keep pounding yourself down and bringing your confidence down too low to where you're never going to get back out of it.
Yeah, try to almost utilize your number.
Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely.
And figure out, because I think there are things to be learned from lower number ropings mm-hmm. to going into an open. Like, I mean, for example, for me, one, I had this flax mane horse probably about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
That I rode a lot. And I was entering a lot of 15s, but it were like, especially when we went out to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was entering a lot of 15s, and he had this great, like, he'd turn his head a little bit to the inside, and you could almost just go with as soon as the gates moved on that World Series start, or he would score if they had a barrier. It didn't really matter. He would score and would flat and leave easy. But he showed me this run where I could, like, kind of one coil on the way in. I turned a lot of steers, but what it helped me do was I kind of built some feel for getting ahead of the ropings.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had runs where I'm like, oh man, we're good on two. Like, we just need to catch these next two steers. Or you have those ones where it's like, I'm behind in the roping. We need to go be fast.
Yeah.
And he would let me do either or, like, and do it for pretty big money. Like, one time at the World Series finale, I was 15 on two, and I thought I needed to be fast to get in those top 10 calls. And
mm-hmm.
I was short six on the third one and short six in the short round. And he'd let me win good.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized was that same feel, it's the same in the open,
mm-hmm.
except for the times are faster and absolutely. They catch more. And there's just less room for error. But it gives you opportunity, right? To like,
yes. Hey. That's what I learned in like the 14s and the 15s. Like, I had to get, at one time I felt like I was doing too much, like just trying to be high call every time. Like, I want to know when I backed in the box in the short round in the 14 point that all I had to do is just catch and I'm going to win.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work. You can't go at it like that. And you started to figure out the pace of the, I started listening, paying attention, watching to the pace of their opens to where I could go off on the third one or the second one, or, you know, see how the first one went, knock the first one down. And if he was a good steer, try to go six, long six on him or seven on him in the first round and then set the roping up. Well, if you drew one that wasn't that good, you just go knock him down and then go through the ropings instead of just trying to muck it out of everyone in the 14 point. And then you get to the third one and you just throw it 3 foot to the right of him because the steer wasn't ready to be healed yet.
Right.
And that happened to me multiple times. And I just felt like I would leave there and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, all I had to do is, and then I sit there every time I don't make a short round, I sit there and I watch the short round no matter what.
Yeah.
Because I sit there and be like, well, all I had to do, if I could just catch that steer, I'm sixth high callback. Well, then second, third, and fourth high callback miss. All I had to do was catch in the short round. I win second or third. I make money for the day. And I sit there, I make myself sit there and pay attention to the short round to then when I go back to the next one, I'll have a better understanding of how ropings can fall apart. They can get tough, but what I've learned is if you do not catch, you will not win.
Right. Well, and two, I love that because there's a lot of ways to make up time in the roping.
Mm-hmm.
If you're long on two, meaning still kind of good, but you feel like you're about 10th or 15th mm-hmm. in the average after two, being five can make up a lot of ground and,
mm-hmm.
and kind of two fast runs. But the one that hurts the most is when there's the roping is falling apart in the third and fourth rounds.
Yeah.
And you don't know it. Because usually those ropings to me are like one or two guys draw lopers the whole way through, and there might be six on every steer. And first call and second call are really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone else sees that and they start taking risks and they miss.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, third and fourth are wide open in a roping where two catches, win third or fourth, and these guys have already drawn lopers. So it's like you can't even hardly beat them unless they just got to beat themselves at that point.
Absolutely.
You know, they've got to either catch or miss, but it's on them. And I those are the ropings that make me sick when I go out there, when I know I just have to catch to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can live with going fast, right? Yeah. And
trying to win.
Yeah.
You're trying to win.
I think so. That's been pretty good for you to hold money together, right?
Mm-hmm. When
like go to the opens, because the hard part about open potting around here is
you're not gonna win every time, and you're not gonna win. You're gonna win few and far between, and just hope it's at a good one. Really, I mean, you're gonna go on streaks or whatever. I mean, I can count on one hand of the opener opens that I've placed at since I've been out here.
Yeah, and what's odd about the opener open is how many guys keep grinding on it.
Mm-hmm.
and they've kind of got to figure it out, like how to make money open roping, right? Because if you're gonna make money as a professional team roper,
mm-hmm.
making money rodeoing seems to be, it's probably a harder way to make a lot of money, but it's an easier way to hold it together because you've got added money at the rodeos. You can kind of pick your spots if you don't want to.
And it's enter once.
Yeah, enter once. That's a big help when Clay Smith isn't going a few times. Exactly. That makes it nice. You know, there's a lot of ways like that really help to hold money together.
Yeah.
But open jackpotting, it's crazy from that standpoint, is it's really competitive. But then also the fees they're high.
Yeah.
I mean,
when I try to, like, if I'm starting to get to a point where I'm not comfortable, I'll, you know, bring myself back down to reality. But I make sure that I have all my ducks in a row for, like, the open showdown this week. It's pick one, draw one.
Yep.
Those pick one, draw ones, I want to be entered as many times as I can. Any amount of chances to draw Clay Smith, Cody Snow, the Driggers, the Clay Trine. I want a chance at that because I want to. That's my chance at getting ahead, number one, and getting one of those guys one day.
Well, and I totally agree. On top of it, the open shot and the pick and draws are.
Mm-hmm.
I love those ropings because instead of go three times straight pick, those top tier guys have to split up. They get to go one time and then draw a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get those draws in there, you get the chances, but it also means their second and third partner sometimes they're not roping with them.
Mm-hmm.
So the ropings, they have the same amount of teams or more sometimes, like the open showdown is going to have quite a few.
Yeah.
And so you get a big chance at money and you get a chance to draw those top tier guys. And like you said, do a good job for them, mm-hmm. get them again.
That's right.
So last year you won Fort Worth, right?
Yep.
How much did it pay to win Fort Worth?
I won $23,000.
$23,000. Were you high teamer at Fort Worth?
No, I was last high team.
You're 12th?
Yeah.
I didn't even watch Fort Worth. So you got to take me through this. All right. So you guys were good on two at Fort Worth, like had gotten both caught or were you long on one?
No, it was the tournament. It was tournament style that year.
Sorry, I forgot how Fort Worth worked last. Yeah. Okay. So you had went. In tournament style, basically, it's a one-header each time.
Right? Yeah, it's you guaranteed two head, and then the top two money winners out of each bracket, then come back to the semifinals, and then they had two semifinals, and then the top six out of each semifinal come back to the finals, I think, and then maybe a wild card in there or something. And I didn't have a partner for it. I was top 43 from the year before, so I was last guy to get in for the world standings.
Right.
And I just called ProCom and put my name down, and I got Clay Ullery. And the only time I talked to him was on the phone. Never seen him, never roped with him, never nothing. Just called him. He asked me when I could go. I told him when I'd like to go and whatever. We got in a bracket. And I got a leg on the first one, and we won the next night. We won the second round of the first whole deal. And then we come back to the semifinals, and we were first team. I feel like we were first team. We were last team the first night, And I'm like, roped a leg 1/4, come back, first team the next night, win the round, first team in the semifinals, just go catch, and got back to the finals. And then we were first team in the finals.
You know, that's what's odd about those, like, sudden death deals is when it's go twice and they take the top money guys, mm-hmm. that kind of makes sense. Like, San Antonio, how it does it, it's like, okay, I got it. You know, you make a couple good runs, you're for sure coming back. But when it gets down to a one-header, it's really odd because going at the beginning of the deal, there's just like that, you go catch.
Yeah.
You've got to sweat out teams and you really don't know, like, will it make it back? Will it not?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of hard to know, like, how aggressive to be, how conservative to be.
Absolutely.
So Fort Worth, you first to go.
Yeah,
we're lowest money, and then you guys make a what kind of run in that?
I think we went 6-3
in the, like, finals.
No, in the semifinals.
In the semifinals, 6-3, but that's a pretty good run. Yeah, over there, Steer. Fort Worth. Yeah,
he went off to the right, just went and caught.
Yeah,
and we were last. Obviously, last to get in out of our set. We were last to get in out of our set in the semifinals, and then we're the lowest money winners throughout the whole deal because we didn't place in the semifinals.
Right.
So I think at that point we'd had 3,000 won, something like that.
Okay.
And that's where the 3,000, 23,000 come from was the first two nights.
Okay. So you're first to go in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
And how fast were you guys in the finals?
I think 4.9.
4.9.
Yeah.
So you're sweating out those teams.
Yeah, we were first team, and I mean, I didn't have any game plan at all. I was just like, well, I'm going to heel the steer and see where it ends up.
Yep.
And I was just thinking, you know, if you go clean, you're probably going to win something, and shoot, 5,000 would be great.
Yeah.
You know, just placing. They paid a lot of holes. I'm like, that'd be awesome. And he comes across and he hooks. Deep neck, I ride around the end of it and throw pretty fast. Just didn't get a great finish at all either. Like, when I heeled the steer, I felt like we were 4-flat.
Right.
And we were 4-9. And I was like, well, I'd seen faster runs all week there. I'm like, well, we probably got a chance on placing decent now.
Yeah.
Like, instead of 6th or 7th, we might win 4th or 5th. And I had to push steer, or I had to push a steer or something. So I had to, like, I loped my horse all the way back around because I didn't want to let them guys down. Like, my heroes are asking me to push steers, and I'm like, I want to get back there. I want to help, whatever. So I loped my horse all the way back around and get in there, and I push some, get some steer's heads, and I'm just watching as it's going down. I'm like, wow. I can't remember the numbers, but I was like, wow, 5,000, that's awesome. Wow, and I kept seeing my name, like, stay in that one spot. I'm like, wow, 8,000, that's awesome. 11,000, that's crazy. 15,000, and then Clay and Jade, last team, and I'm like, hey, what I'm winning right now, this is unbelievable. I just won second at the biggest rodeo in the world.
Yeah.
Because I knew Clay and Jade had to go. Like, they're not. They're going to do their deal, like they do every time. And I get the steer's head, and I hide from the neck rope. And I come back down about that time. Jade takes one more swing, and I'm like, well, that's funny. And he heels him, and the clock just keeps ticking. It's like 4-8, 4-9, and then they end up going like 5-1 or something.
Right.
And I'm standing there. I'm at the rope and shoot now. And I'm like, what? Looking up, looking around, like looking at the big screen, cannot believe that I just won this rodeo.
Yeah. It's funny how it doesn't feel like you – the expectations are high
mm-hmm.
going into one. You're like, well, I'm just kind of almost like,
yeah.
Does it, to me, I always look at those days. Does it feel like kind of like a, like you're in like a flow state? Like when you you look back at the heel shot, were you nervous going into it or no? And you're just kind of like a normal rodeo, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was just happy that I was able to be in the situation. I mean, it's one of the coolest, one of the best rodeos of the year. And, you know, it's got so much history behind it, and I'm in the short round.
Yep.
Like, that's kind of what I was going into. I have nothing to lose. At that time, I'm planning on going home for the summer. I have no intentions of rodeoing, no intentions of, I mean, I was going to stay in Texas or Florida. I think I was going back to Florida for a few months, and then I was going home.
Right.
I had zero intentions of doing anything. And so just not a care in the world. And then I healed a steer, and then they're like, oh, you going rodeoing? I'm like, I guess now. Well, I have to.
Well, now.
Yeah.
Have you rodeoed before that point?
Mm-mm.
It hadn't been out west.
No. I'd been to Spooner. I went to Spooner and met Clear Lake, South Dakota, and
right.
just some of the duck offs, but I had never been day in, day out, stay out there for a month at a time.
Well, it couldn't have happened at a wilder time for you to sign to rodeo. Because, how big of a ups and downs are this? Fort Worth happens.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Within the next 30 days, COVID hits?
Yeah, I went. So I was in Texas. I was staying at my cousin's house. Yeah. Went to Fort Worth. Went to Fort Worth. I fly back to Florida to go to Brighton. Rope there. Turn around. Fly back to go to San Antonio. I roped with Corey Kidd there. Roped at San Antonio. Didn't do no good. Loaded up. Back to Florida. Get to Florida, and I was planning on roping with Zach Kilgus at Austin. And he was going to go until I could find someone to go out west with. So I had him at Austin or whatever was left. We're going to go to some. And then this whole deal happens, and now I'm stuck in Florida.
There could be worse places.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know. But I say stuck in Florida. I kept seeing they were having some little jackpots and stuff out here, and they were.
Yeah.
We just practiced. That's what we look forward to every day when we were in Florida. We'd go run 10 or 12 steers in the evening, and that's what we did for 30 days every day. It didn't matter. We just felt like we were in a movie, like we were doing the same thing every day.
Well, too, what are you thinking as they're canceling rodeos? Because you've obviously got 23 to 30,000 at this point.
I had 30,000.
30,000. Now they're canceling.
Mm-hmm.
They cancel Houston. They cancel Austin.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, what are you thinking at this point?
Well, I have two different mindsets at this point. Because everybody I talk to, they're like, you got the finals made. You're going to the NFR.
They might cancel all the rodeos.
They're going to have it. People are like, they're going to have the NFR, and they're not going to have rodeos. You're in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, that sucks. I want to go. But then I'm like, I keep thinking, I'm like, they're going to get something figured out.
Right.
At some point. And then they do, and I go, and I have, literally at one point, I'm set up as good as someone could be set up.
Yeah, you've had the best winner.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically.
Yeah, well, they canceled Houston, and they had San Antonio. You won as much as a guy could really win in the winter, and then. You go all summer long and don't get it done.
Well, that's what's so interesting about rodeo in general,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, there's the highest of the highs. You go from top few in the world all winter and spring, mm-hmm. and summer. And then rodeoing, it can just not work, right? Or whatever it may be, but you don't win.
No.
And it happens to a lot of guys. And what I find the special part about that is you get to learn a lot about yourself.
Mm, absolutely.
What's the lowest point of the summer last year?
The tour finale.
Tour finale.
Yeah. I'd had high hope. I never was like, man, I'm running out of time. I never felt that.
Right.
The whole time. Up until I run my last steer, I thought I had a chance. Which I, in some sort of way, really did. I did have a chance until I run the last steer. I missed my dahlia at the first one at tour finale. And that was the lowest point.
Right.
Of a lot of my life.
Yeah, if going into that year, they say, hey, the last steer you run.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a chance to make the NFR. It's an outside chance.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to take that, or do you want to see how the year plays out?
Yeah.
Probably going to take it, ain't you?
Yeah. It was lot of emotions going into last year because I knew we had to do good. And my horse was sore. My horse, I have had two horses out there, but my yellow was sore, like kind of three-legged. I kind of tried to help him out. I give him some butte and all that stuff. And I like lope him around. Like they're about to run the first team and I lope him around.
He's off.
He's off. And I'm like, you know what? I'm staying on him.
Right.
Like we've been through all this. I'm staying on him. And I ride in the box and he felt the best he'd ever, like everything clicked, steer run, header hooked. I'm right all the way to the end of it, throw fast, everything comes together. And I cheat it. I go like halfway around the horn and I go to pull back thinking it's over. I don't get all the way around the horn. Pops off, breaks my fingers, cuts my fingers all up. And I was just like, just so disappointed. It was over. At that point, was okay, it's over. You're done.
Yeah.
We turned out of Stephenville. I don't even want to run the second steer. I just want to be done. And then I was like, you know, everything's going to be okay. Just try to get some money. Try to get the money in the second round. Didn't do no good. But then I stayed out there and I went to the Wrangler Finals. And I ended up winning $14,000 at the Wrangler Finals. And that's when I was like, it's over. Everything's going to be okay. Forget about it. It's just, is what it is. Can't take anything back. I was there, tried, entered everything. Went everywhere I could. Tried as hard as I could at every one of them, and it didn't work. I mean, there's nothing else you could do about it.
You broke your fingers. Your middle finger, is that mm-hmm. the one you broke?
Yeah.
And burned them up pretty good. And then what did you do after you broke your finger to run that next steer?
I just taped them up.
Do you ever get x-rays on it? I mean, I can see it.
It's pretty bad. It's been broke quite a few times, so I knew. It was crooked before, and then when I just know when it's broke now.
Yeah. At least you, I think it's funny to look back on those times when it's like, man, how like everything's on the line. It's not funny. That's a really bad way to phrase it, but it's like, it's this weird, unique moment mm-hmm. where there's all these things that go into it. Your horse sore. He's giving you everything you got. I mean, you're obviously very close.
Yeah.
You're willing to sacrifice, you know, you're trying to hold on to it and shut her down. But that's gotta be the hardest thing for any young roper to go through, to not make the finals.
Yeah.
And have a chance and be close and it kinda be on you. That's gotta be one of the hardest.
The ball was in my court.
Yeah.
It was there. I did everything right. And my biggest pet peeve of my entire life came back, and it bit me again.
Well, I mean, you lost 150 pounds.
I know. That's what I tell everybody. I was like, well, maybe it wasn't because I was big. It's just terrible at dailying.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but going to the Wrangler Finals, in 14,000. It's a few days apart, right? It's like within two or three.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really hard one to shake because it's like, I mean,
it was hard to shake because I stayed at the tour finale.
You watched the rest of it?
I watched every perf.
What are you thinking? Like, does it motivate you?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to run. I got in the heel box every night.
You did?
Yeah. I watched every steer go, push steers, whatever. And I just, all I want to do is run another one. I wanted to run that one again.
Just want another chance, right? So you, I mean, that's pretty impressive to go right into competition with something like that. Because it's pretty easy to say, hey, I want to go home. Because it's just a Wrangler. I mean, it's not just the Wrangler Finals. It's the best, one of the best ropings out there.
Yeah.
But it's pretty easy to want to break.
Yeah.
Like, just say, hey, I'm going to go home for a while and reevaluate.
Yeah. And I had, I didn't know. I stayed at the tour finale, went to the Wrangler Finals. And I called my mom. She's like my accountant. She handles all that stuff. Yeah. I called her and I'm like, I just enter. And I give them my card. I double down and everything. And my mom, I call my mom like, hey, how much is on my in my account. She's like, I think like 4,600. And I go to pay my tab and my card declines. And I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah.
But I was like, I'd won something. I'd won 6,000 the first day and I was just going to pay it with my card. I didn't think it was that much. And the lady, she's like, it declined. I was like, will you hold that check while I enter for the rest of the week on my fees? She's like, yep, no problem. So I just kept rolling.
Mentally, are you good? Like, when you go to the, did you feel like you were nervous with that one at the tour finale? Like, do you think it was a mental lapse or do you think it was just like a physical, just made a mistake?
I think it's excitement more than anything.
Right.
I mean, I get excited. I like to lean on it when I catch 2 feet. Like, I like, that's just
more of a, more
everything of a, happened too fast. Like, everything happened, head rope on, around him, heel to steer. I knew I healed. I mean, it was all perfect. Everything came together and I just leaned back before I get it all the way around the horn.
Right. So you feel good mentally, right? Mm-hmm. That's like, hey, handled it well.
Yeah.
So I think is that something you try to build on, is knowing like, hey, I can run mm-hmm. this high pressure of a steer.
Yeah.
And I know I'm capable
of doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Of executing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you look at that run like that? Like, hey, do you try to pick out the good things or do you, how do you try to handle yourself to get better but not break yourself down?
Well, I was disappointed because of the way it happened. Like, I'd rather, I don't know. Missing my dally in that situation was the most heart killer of anything.
Yeah.
Always struggled with that. I've lost more money missing my dally than anything. And that is what kept me from, not that is not what kept me, but that killed my last chance of making my biggest dream my whole life.
Right.
Was making the finals. And that is what killed my last chance. And that hurt me. But I learned from it. I've learned from it since. Well, I've worked on my dallying since then. But I've took it as when I back in there, anywhere I go, I know I tell myself I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be in this spot. I'm good enough to be here. But as soon as I leave the roping, I have to have a mindset of I'm not good enough.
Right.
To work at it to where you got to work at it every day. You got to work on something every day. You got to rope. You got to feel like you're not good enough. But when you get there, got to have the confidence. Because I know now I've been in the situations, not as much as I'd not a whole bunch, but I've been in some situations against those guys and been on the top and been on the bottom. So have to be confident when you get there. When you leave, right back to your itty bitty now.
You're like two different people. When you're there, mm-hmm. you're the best in the world, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's what I feel like. No one heads better than me.
No. Nope.
And I try not to act like that, but I try to believe that I'm the best header there.
Yeah.
Even healer sometimes for me. And that is definitely not true. But when I'm in competition, like, I feel like I'm going to get them.
Yeah. Like, I listened to, like you said, you know, you got to tell yourself you're the best there. You're not going to act like it. But, like, I listened to Clay Tryon's podcast the other day on here.
Right.
And those guys talk different. Like, they when they're at the open, they talk different, they walk different, they act different. And there's something to be said for that, I think.
I totally agree. I mean, I think Clay's a great example. I like to tease and make fun of Clay a lot, and but I actually look up to him probably more than most headers because, well, I mean, I think I said it just the other day. Like, man, he should be getting old. Like, a lot of guys mm-hmm. should physically be able to pass him up, but they can't, and it's basically up to him how much he wins still.
Yeah.
And when you talk to him, I feel like he's got this deal where he can see it as it is.
Mm-hmm.
But he also has worked to the point where he now has he has the physical skill.
Yeah.
And he's competed enough to know what it takes to win in these ropings and at these rodeos. And that's going back to it. When you practice, there's this weird balance between breaking yourself down too much,
yep,
and building yourself up, like working on the right things, like
yeah,
working on your dolly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's easy to take that last steer, last mistake we've made into the practice pin and then just beat our head yeah against a rock. And I think that's where I struggle the most, or I try not to
yeah
let that happen anymore. But for you, when you say you want to go practice and work on it, like
mm-hmm
like you don't, like you've got, how do you say that again? Like, I don't, I'm not the best guy there. You know, you've got mm-hmm a lot of things to improve on that,
yeah,
that mentality. What does your practice look like now? How do you try to structure that?
There's a few things. I dally on every steer.
Right.
No matter what now. I put it on the horn every time.
Yeah. Make sure you get that feel of getting it around the horn, even if you pop it off, like yep, before they get that jerk.
And that is, I forget who explained it to me. It might have been Ullery. We were just talking about it one day, and I was just like, I struggle with it. Well, I started dallying every time, and the way he explained it was, you need to dally every time in the practice pen, because the most weird things are gonna happen in the practice pen. Get one up around the gut, steer fall down, steer's running, steer runs the rope, follows, checks off, they're practice steers, right? So if you can dally on them, well, you never know what you're gonna rope at the rope in. So if you've done it before in the practice pen, or if you just hold it up, don't dally in the practice pen, well, get one up around the gut in the practice pen, you don't dally, you get to the jackpot, get one up around the gut. Haven't done that in this long. You're not sharp. You're not prepared for it.
Right.
You know the feel. If you do it, now you know the feeling of when it happens in the jackpot.
Right. So do you try to put, how many horses do you have to get, like, a string of horses so your practice sessions? I know this is what's so fascinating to me about, your spot is you're mm-hmm just getting rolling. Like,
yeah,
you're young,
yeah,
and you're just getting into it. So you're at all the stages where it's kind of like this beautiful balance of, man, I've been close.
Mm-hmm.
Do I got what it takes?
Yeah.
You want to do it bad. And so now you're putting all this together.
Yeah.
What does your practice string of horses look like right now?
That's not very good.
Right.
I have two horses.
Two horses total.
Yeah. That get it nine times. Both of them get it every day.
Two practice horses is what?
No.
Two good horses.
I have my yellow and I have a black horse.
Right. And so that's what you work on with your horses. And
mm-hmm
when you're practicing, it's got to feel, you just try to make sure, hey, if my horse needs something,
yeah,
I can work on them, but you get a lot of it for yourself as yeah well.
And that's probably not, I don't know if that's good or bad, but like I have two horses and I always try to ride my yellow last because that way I'm always riding him at the jackpots. Most jackpots, all open ropings, most jackpots, I ride my yellow.
Right.
So I try to ride him last. So that way, I know that horse inside and out. I know every move he's going to make.
Yeah.
And, which, it's hard because I only have two horses. But also, in a way, it doesn't hurt because I know both those horses. I know everything about them. I rope on them every day. And I only run two or three on my yellow. Some days I'll run 15. If I need to rope, they're getting it.
Right.
And that sucks to say, but that's the only tools I have, and that's the tools that's going to get me where do I want to be, and they're going to have to deal with it.
Well, it can be looked at however you want to see it, but that's up to you,
yeah,
right? Because
yeah
it's like, just like you say, well, I'm practicing on the ones you're competing on,
mm-hmm,
so you know exactly what it's going to feel like.
Mm-hmm.
When you run a steer, you know exactly what you got, and that even puts you more in that situation. Like, what was it the other day? It's been a couple months, but you guys had all day in one of those 16 ropings to
mm-hmm
to win the roping.
Yeah,
like it was weird because at Austin's, yeah, at
Robertson Hill,
yeah, because the roping had been pretty fast, and the times are decently fast over there. Like it's pretty. Mid 6 to 7 second run
mm-hmm
is seems like what was kind of getting made. Yeah. And I feel like you guys were you a high teamer over there, right?
Yeah.
And you had to be like.
We had to be 11-9.
11-9. Mm-hmm. So you just got to keep him in the arena.
Yeah.
And that's what you do.
Yeah.
And you know, you definitely didn't throw fast. Just no. Followed him, almost circled him kind of back. Yeah, like back not, up the not, arena. Not a full circle, but you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
You set it up to where it was, the money did not get away.
Yeah.
And you have that advantage now knowing what your horses do each time. So if you do have to go catch, you've got it. And I think it's just, it's all in perspective, but that's what's so crazy about team roping, right? Mm-hmm. You can only ride one horse.
Yeah.
You know, when you're competing, you can only ride one horse at a time.
Yeah.
One saddle, one rope. Like, I don't care.
And I felt that when I was a kid or when I was younger at home, I say kid, I was 18. First year pro roading up there, I had three horses. And I was riding a different one each night, felt like.
Right.
I don't know why. I roped every day. Whatever I caught the best on the night before, I take him to the rodeo. Well, horse doesn't feel the same from the rodeo or from the practice pen to the rodeo. I then figured out I rode the same horse for weeks at a time at the rodeo and got in a rhythm with them at the rodeo because they don't feel that they're not going to make the same exact moves and react the same exact way from the practice pen to the rodeo. So I then just would stick to one horse for weeks at a time. And if a week or a week and a half went by and I didn't win, well, I'm going to get on something else. But I wasn't changing night to night, day to day, because then I could never get in a rhythm.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably one of the hardest things about healing, like being a rodeo healer, mm-hmm. right, is getting in a rhythm.
Yeah.
Because, well, that's where good headers are so important, right? If we have a header that can go real fast, but mm-hmm. it's not turned into a high percentage of steers.
Yeah.
Well, those rolls when you don't see your header and then all of a sudden the steer just ducks back to be four flat, mm-hmm. it's really hard to heal. I mean, every healer will tell you they should have got them, I think.
Oh, absolutely. But we're supposed to catch everyone. Yeah, that's our job.
Supposed to get them by 2 feet. But it's tough to not see it again or, you know, not mm-hmm. know where to ride to. And
absolutely.
And that's where the chemistry with your horse, everything is so, yep. so valuable and knowing where to place yourself. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's where, like, well, I was heading some steers for Travis Graves the other day and I asked him about healing for Dustin. He's like, you just got to not panic.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, absolutely.
And there's so many of those things where, as you build it up, if you've got good chemistry with your horse and then yeah. something happens odd with the steer, your header turns him really, really fast, or, you know, the steer's running and he's a lot of rope, you kind of know where to be and give yourself a chance, yeah. right?
You figure out the holes and the weaknesses that your horses have. And like Miguel, there's some weaknesses that you can't, I mean, he's 15 years old and he kind of is what he is. Kind of like when, and buildings, when steers step to the left, he's weak. Like yeah. won't get up and around them, and there's nothing that I can do about it. I'll try to ride something else. I'll try to ride like my black or like if I know that situation's steer's gonna go left, in a smaller arena, it's just not good at it. I'll either ride my backup horse, or and if I don't have it, you know what you're gonna have to do to even come close to getting by. But I know as soon as it happens, I know right. the feeling as soon as the steer steps to the left, I know what my horse is going to feel like.
Yeah. And then you know, like, hey, I might not be able to get there for that.
No.
And I'm going to get that next shot. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of.
And then you got to decipher, well, what depends on what the rodeo is.
Yeah.
I mean, depends on what's happening. Do I need to ride to a spot and get him when he goes by me and make sure I get the steer caught? Or do I get him in the whip? Just yeah. over the hip, make a miracle happen. You're yeah. either going to be the hero or the zero. But that's what you got to, you know it. He shows it to me fast, so I know what it's going to be like, and you got to make that decision split second.
Right.
But I feel like if I didn't ride him as much as I do, it's like if I let you jump on him and heal him on him in that situation, you wouldn't get the same cue or know what he's gonna do like I do.
I'll probably miss him at Rope a Leg anyways.
So I've missed quite a few of them.
it doesn't even matter if they're a layup for me, man. And it goes fast. I'm not that strong at it. What about the mental side of it, rodeoing all year long? What was the biggest challenge mentally that you kind of figured out this summer rodeoing?
Shoot. There was a lot of things. Like, what I figured out this summer was, so you roped against 120 of the best guys in the world at every rodeo you went to. Normal rodeos that would get 30, 40, 50 teams were getting 90, 100, 120.
Yeah.
And you had to, that's when I kind of had to talk myself into, okay, you're supposed to be here. I'm meant to be here. I'm one of these guys. But when I left there, it wasn't as bad of rodeo to rodeo because you couldn't practice in between. So you still had to kind of keep my confidence up. I wouldn't just drill myself from rodeo to rodeo on what I did wrong, because you got to show up that next night without practicing in between and perform. So keeping confident, keeping positive, no matter if things weren't going right, was probably what I had to learn, or you might as well have just went home.
Just staying kind of almost optimistic the whole time.
Yeah, and knowing that I had a chance, no matter if I had 35 steers left to run, because I had it down pretty much to the steer of how many steers I had left to run.
Right.
Like, I got 35 steers to make the NFR. I got 20 steers to make the NFR. Well, it's last week. It's our last week here. You got to start picking it up.
Yeah.
Well, it's my last one.
Right. What about a lot of teams that struggle sometimes, or not even struggle? It's usually addressed when they struggle. But if they miss or something goes wrong, they try to change right away.
Yeah.
Is that something that you seen people do, or did you yourself try to do that, or how did you try to?
I did at first. At the first couple weeks out there, I tried changing a lot.
Right.
And some was changed for the good. Like, I wasn't getting a good start healing. I was behind. I was letting steer step to the right. So I changed that. But then I was also I was afraid to miss. I had to get over that real fast.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't playing my game. My game is right around the end, throw fast. Well, I was not getting all the way around them, but I was like, I could see the feet, and I'd go one or two more just trying to catch, like at the two headers, and it was screwing me because I just wasn't in the right spot, and heck, I'm not used to throwing there.
Right.
And then I started getting a better go, getting a better start, just stick to my game plan. And you had to. Then the rodeos got so fast. There's only so many two headers. Deadwood was the two header that I three jumped him and missed.
Right.
And then after that, I started kind of figuring out that you got to stick to what you know. Because as soon as you start changing, you're going to beat yourself down over something that you haven't even practiced.
Yeah.
And you're trying to change it in the middle of a rodeo.
Yeah, you're trying to change like muscle memory. A lot of guys, I think what happens is they'll get missing, or there's like a certain shot's presented themselves and or presenting itself, and they will go to, well, I need to swing my rope like this, and I need to do that. And I think that's when you get in a lot of trouble. If you will focus on your horse, I think heeling's a little bit different than heading, because heading you don't get as much time to, but heeling, like I said, if you can focus on a few things riding, I think you can make adjustments that way, so that you can get shots that will present themselves. And I think that's a good way to address it too, because you might have a header that wants them more left than right, or you know, so getting a haze as opposed to letting them steer kind of find a pattern. You know, there's a lot of ways to go about that, but it seems like it can get you in trouble if you really go too in depth with it, right?
Oh, you see it every day. People fight their heads, change ropes, change styles. I mean, change horses, change this, change that. Everybody wants to change. And I mean, sounds like a good idea at the time, but when you're in the heat of the moment, you know, I know I've run thousands of steers and thrown in the same spot. I know what my shot feels like. There's no point in changing at right. that moment. You want to go home and change that? That's up to you, but not in the heat of the summer.
What about the mental game? Is that something you study a little bit or work on? Or
I just started.
Just started.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like this. So you're just getting into it.
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to address first of all with it?
I want to be more solid.
Solid, like consistency, like mentally, like kind mm-hmm. of go through the same process.
Yeah, I want to. I feel like I'm having trouble remembering like runs and stuff. Like everything is happening so fast. Like I feel like I'm not focused.
Yeah, get like a black spot in the yeah. run, and
I ride out of the arena and I don't know what just happened. I know what just happened, but like I can't. I'm not slowing. Not everything's slowed down enough for me to see it step by step, and I think that's hindering my healing. Like my shot selection sometimes, because everything just happens so fast. Like I have a blackout moment.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I have them all the time.
Yeah.
Especially like, well, healing, I have them.
Yeah.
Constantly. And I can, like, that's the first thing I always try to address is like, okay, when you're in competition, what are you thinking about? And how many runs did you like throw and not know why you
mm-hmm.
threw right there? Heading, it's a little bit different for me now at this point. So what are you doing to address it? Like, what are you studying? Books? Ask questions? What's the...
Well, I mean, I've listening to podcasts and right. stuff like that. But like the roping part of it, I started riding across the arena sooner, like as a healer. I got jackpots. I'm going jackpots. Rodeos,
yeah.
I feel like I'm in a decent spot, but jackpots, I'm riding across sooner. I'm picturing 2 feet in my head. Like I'm weird. Like sometimes I'll be riding the box and a leg will pop in my mind. Like I'll be envisioning a run and I'll rope leg and I'm like race.
Yeah.
And have to rethink and just think of a run as slow as possible. Like when I'm trying to get focused, I think of a heel shot like this of the corner, steer's open, everything's slow hopping, and just think of a loop as big as you can imagine, heel and steer.
Yeah.
And that is, but that slows me down, slows my mindset down, slows my thinking down. And another thing that's helped is Matt Zancanella told me to count when I back in the box. Like when I back, every time I like one, breathe, two, breathe. Yeah. And I could, everything would slow down. Feel like I could see the gate open. I could see the steer leave and everything would come together. I think that was the biggest thing was the gates feel like all of a sudden, bang, gates open, steer's gone, and I'm 2 strides behind.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much to that right there, because to me what it, a lot of it feels like is, well, our mind, we have a process-oriented or mm-hmm. like outcome-oriented.
Yeah.
And we want the results to be good, but a lot of those times where when we worry about results, that's when like legs are missing or mm-hmm. messing up, like failure, like is that's kind of our fear, whatever yeah. you want to call it. And so those will pop in. And so you either got to replace it or yeah. almost think of, I go to process. This is just what I've studied or believe in, but you go to process or
mm-hmm.
knowing how to do your job and focus on that, or breathe and be in the moment, right? Yeah. Because if you're just reacting, then you're good. I read a book the other day that you ought to check it out. It's I think it's called Finding Superman, but it talks about extreme athletes mm-hmm. A lot with like, oh, their life is on the line basically. So they'd be like base jumping and all kinds of stuff where there's these moments of extreme
mm-hmm.
danger, and they find flow states in there, and they kind of talk about that and then duplicating that flow state and how things can actually slow down and we can react in flow state, like you say, when you see it and it feels like it's in slow motion, right? Mm-hmm. there's those days where it just feels easy.
Yes.
And you're trying to duplicate that process. Mm-hmm. And a lot of athletes, like, it's getting in the zone and getting in things like that, flow state or whatever they want to call it. But breathing or getting in the moment, however mm-hmm. you can, like, trigger that, it's an art form. And I think what happens is so many guys do a job so much, they realize how to do it without, they don't realize, they do it without realizing it.
Yeah.
And they can kind of, like, lock it in. And while, like, I feel like I'm at this stage where I got to get better, so you've got to practice at home,
mm-hmm.
be able to shut it off in competition, and focus on that process. So there's, like, that real fine balance, right, between being good enough, believing that your job, like, you're good enough at it, and then actually being in the moment to do it,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, to get your mind to follow is it's an art, I think.
I'm just trying to take more time. I don't know why. I don't do it every time, and I need to. And, like, you gotta handle. Some people can do it, and some people can't. But you gotta handle your business.
Yeah.
And that's getting to the rope, getting up early, getting to the jackpot when it starts in the morning. You get there, give yourself enough time to where I'm not rushed, and I try to been running a burn steer, but, like, when I do that, I feel like everything, like, I can take a deep breath, I can have time, and I'm not saying 2 hours early or anything like that. You get there enough time, get everything ready, handle your business, and so I can have the time to slow myself down. Not just throwing saddle on, going up there, they're calling your name, you're right across, you're next guy up, and then you're like, by the time you breathe, gets banged.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get myself out of that into where I can process. I can watch the steers, watch a few steers go, whatever, if I can, and then put all that together into my mental state and picture a run in my head of how the run might come together.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, I had a conversation the other day about guys that it's getting pretty predictable about mm-hmm. who you watch at the open ropings are going to be on their horse early, mm-hmm. riding them around and ready to go pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
It's typically, like, a lot of guys ain't ready before Joseph Harrison. And
nope.
I mean, there's, seems like the guys that are on them early, they usually have some real good horses.
Mm-hmm.
Their horses are working good. They are rope, you know, Joseph feels great, but there's a lot of guys like that, like Chad Masters, I think Paul does it. There's a bunch of guys, when you get the open pods, you're like, man, it's an hour and 15 minutes before the first steer's going to be run. And they're on a horse walking around the arena, just kind of easing around. And there's a lot to that, I think, between your horse.
Yeah. That's what I learned, you know. And well, my horse, I know how my gut feels when I'm behind, I'm trotting up there, trying to get a few circles just so I can run one, so I can be halfway prepared. Can't imagine how my horse feels. I just pulled him off the trailer, threw a saddle on his back, trotted him up there, and now I'm asking him for his life.
Yeah.
That is, when you think about it like that is horrible to do, really.
I agree.
And I see, like when I was at the Capitalist this year, probably one of the biggest ropings I've ever been to. Biggest rope in my life. Enter three times. Pick one, draw one. I've got Coleman, Brenton Hall. Is it enter three times or is it enter twice?
Might be pick one, draw one.
It's pick one, draw one, but it's you can enter three times maybe. Maybe it's twice.
I think it's twice, but they got that other rope and it's 1,000 a man.
That's right.
The 10 header. You can get. There's a lot of. There's two or three opens. Like there's a pre-open.
The big pick open. One, draw one.
Yeah.
And I got Coleman Proctor, Brenton Hall.
Yeah.
Great. I get up there. I'm early. Corey Petska. Ain't no one else around. Corey Petska's up there.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, they're my heroes. Corey Petska, hero. And I get to sit in the heel box waiting to run a burn steer, and I get to have a conversation with Corey Petska.
Right.
Like, those if I showed up late, I don't get to do that. Don't get to have that opportunity to talk. And, you know, I mean, I don't even know what we talked about, but get to be around him, you know, get the vibe off him, get to run a burn steer. And when I run my first one, that steer didn't matter where he was in the arena. I knew I could heal him.
Yeah. Yeah, just being prepared and seeing guys like that. But, I mean, that kind of makes me think, what about coming to Stephenville? You know, there's obviously a ton of professional guys. Is there – who do you ask? Who do you start picking their brains first when you get out here? Is that something you do? Or?
Well, I don't know. I was standoffish. I mean, I didn't want to be that guy.
Just kind of shy, right?
Yeah, I was shy. But I got to hang out with some guys, and you know what? Now I'm not afraid to ask. I know not to ask again if, like, someone doesn't really give me an answer.
Yeah.
I mean, you just figure out who you can talk to, like Hunter Cook, Peyton Bray. I ask them a question, and get an answer.
Yeah.
I mean, look at videos, talk about it, and then that start figuring that out, and can't be afraid to ask. And, I mean, they're out. You might as well utilize it if they're willing to. They've been there. They've done that. They've. You gotta take the opportunities when they're there.
Right.
Because they've at some point have went through the same trials and tribulations as you.
So. Yeah, I mean, both of them have went through it within the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They both went from guys that.
I think, and they help more because I don't know if they help more, but. 22. We're all 22.
Yeah.
And they're here, I feel like, and I'm here. But at some point, they were at the spot I am, and they've went through the same things as me. So, and they, I feel like I get more out of asking them than I would other people because at some point, we have the same mindset.
Yeah.
At the same amount, at the same spot in our in time, really.
Right. That's funny to hear because I think, is that hard to think about, or is there a certain amount of humility you try to have when you like, because I want to believe that I grew up as good as, especially like at 22 years old, yeah. I believed I roped as good as any 22 year old out there. So I would have a hard time asking someone like that for advice, which is a big mistake, yeah. I mean, I think for me to make, but is that hard on your ego, or do you try to look at it like, how do you try to have enough humility to like take things in from, you know, guys that are your peers, but at the same time you're the same age. So it's like, it's kind of odd, you know?
Well, I mean, I hate to look at it like this cause they're my friends. Yeah. Like, cause I mean, we've hung out, we're good friends, but they're tens.
Yeah.
They made the finals. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how old they are. They're at a different spot than I am. They're above me. And I want to be that. I want to be at their spot someday.
Yeah.
So I don't look at it as being embarrassed. I mean, some questions I have get a little embarrassed about it, but they don't ever make me feel like I should be embarrassed for asking that. Because some things are simple, but I feel like I can get through things quicker when I ask them because we've kind of went through it at the same time of our lives, even though I feel like they're ahead of me.
Right. Well, and those two guys are, I mean, they're pretty much ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
I mean, they're top.
It doesn't matter how old they are. They're one of the best healers in the world.
Yeah. Those guys are unreal. And well, and I think too, it's a healthy way to be as you keep hitting different tiers of your roping, right? Because even the best guys in the world are going to want to improve and work at it like those two are. I mean, Peyton and Hunter work at it all the time. And,
all day, every day.
And so that's like that growth mindset, right? Of trying to address what you're weak at and want to get better at and be able to constantly get good information, right? And the right information. Because I think that's one thing about roping is we're kind of self-taught, really. Like you have to have this amount of self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
Because what you do might work really good for you and it might not work for the next person, mm-hmm. or the same way for like something Peyton might do or Hunter might do might yeah. really work good from them, but it might not work for you, but it might work for the next guy. And yeah. so there's like all these variables in how we ride our horses, how our horses work, mm-hmm. how our swing works, you know, and even the timing of how you see, you know, shots. And mm-hmm. so there's all these variables. So you got to have this amount of self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
And then you've got to be able to go like, okay, this is what they're telling me. This is what I need to add, and then go yeah. work at it. Right.
I mean, you can't just go home and watch videos. I can't just go home and watch videos of them and shake out a humongous loop like Peyton's got and swing as hard as Hunter does.
Right.
And then put it all to me. That's just not my style. It's not going to work. But like the way Peyton keeps his shoulders to the steer in the way Hunter gets to the front of the saddle, like those are the little things that I could put into my style
yep.
to make me better. It's not how they swing. It's not how big of a loop they use. It's just the body posture. And you got to change that into your style, not the more broad things, just the little fine tuner things to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about this with Clay Smith the other day. I've been watching him rope probably the most out of everyone. I was like, what does he do that I think so unique compared to everyone else? I'm like, his swing, where he gets his swing up pretty fast. Like, mm-hmm. those horses are leaving and then it's ready to throw immediately, but it's still a swing that them head horses can keep moving forward. So mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, where's his shoulders? Where's his hand? Where is everything going up to so he can kind of pick those spots? And then I try to address, okay, this is what makes sense. This is where I can start applying that. It's not, we easily get lost in like, oh, well, he uses this bit and his loop is this size. Yeah. That will help some people at yeah. certain levels.
Yes.
But once you kind of hit your style and your spot, I think you kind of got to own what you need to own. Mm-hmm. And then you need to tweak on the things that like really make sense. Like, well, Peyton, for example, with the shoulders like they are, it makes it really easy for him to get into his delivery.
Yeah.
And he heals phenomenal and just comes right out mm-hmm. of it into his delivery. So he can like rip quick hopping steers.
Yeah. And I talked to him about it at Odessa. We were during the Slack and we were watching my runs from the Super Tuesday, the jackpot the day before. And I run a steer with Grady Quam off to the right. I heel the steer. My tip doesn't come through very much. I get a leg. Well, we muck it out of the next four and end up placing. Well, I showed him the videos, and as soon as he watches the first steer, he tells me about my shoulders or whatever.
Right.
Well, then I watched the next four videos and I did it.
Yeah.
But it was the realization of that's a key thing to focus on. If I can think about that, everything else is going to set up and come together. That was the key part that I was missing to put everything to start a new beginning of everything coming together.
Yeah. Now, do you take, like, let's say we do that. We'll take that shoulder position.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you just take and work on the dummy? And on, like, how do you try to make that to where you don't have to think about it again?
Repetition every time. Well, that's the mental thing. And now we're going back to the mental thing. That's right. Where I feel like I'm struggling. I go to a practice pen. I can rope all. I love roping. I could rope all day long.
Yeah.
And just rope and catch. But now I'm getting to the point where I feel like my mental game's not there enough to where I'm focusing on something I need to work on, like that, like the shoulders thing.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing it. I'm not doing it every time though, and I need to be doing it every time.
Yeah.
And that's where I've been trying to work on focusing more when I'm practicing at the rodeos and
yeah, focus on it each practice run, mm-hmm. each if you rep the dummy at all,
mm-hmm.
yeah, each loop on the dummy until you don't have to think about it. And yep. it's like, if you're not thinking about it, you're just going to naturally do it, right? Yep. But it's a lot of reps.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
and then I only have two horses. I can only run so many, which going back to it, it's probably good because I can run average 20 steers a day.
Yeah.
Okay. I only got to focus on 20 steers a day. Surely I can do that.
Yeah.
But I catch myself not. So that's what I've been trying to put to use.
It's a really good good way to self-evaluate too, is knowing, okay, this is what I want to work on. Mm-hmm. How many times can I focus on that?
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that if that's what you're focusing on, like for me, that's what I would try to take to the competition, right?
Yeah.
And so when those gates open, how many times in a row did I do it in practice? How many times in a row did I do it in competition?
Mm-hmm.
Did I create a winning performance that day? Like, did I heal good enough? Was everything right where it needed to be? And that's I think that's it. That's the art form of improving, scaling your roping up quickly. Yeah. I think, man, it's been an hour and a half. I think this has been a really fun podcast for me because it's like, I loved how you went about your roping, watching it the whole time. I know last year it was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. It was everything in between, right?
Yeah.
You know? But very rarely do you see a guy have the low and then just right with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what I think so cool about it. And, you know, that's why I was wanting to talk about it today is, you know, that kind of that mentality you have. And, you know, you're here trying it on, and I think that's pretty cool.
I appreciate it.
Thanks again, man.
Yes, sir.